final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch cat. Fish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land.
and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Thank you. game is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, you're listening to Mad Science on www.shazizradio.com. If you want to jump over there in the chat room there of shazizradio.com/superchat.html. I can't even talk, Thomas. I'm falling over my own lips.
Falling over your lips? Are there like two snails laying on the floor? Or two slugs laying on the floor? Did somebody slap you in the face really hard and knock them off?
Maybe. It's just like I got a whole lot of stuff on my mind that I want to try to squeeze into this show and everything, to try to share some ideas with some folks, and maybe some folks to take these ideas and run with them. Anyway, jump over there to www.shazizradio.com/ That was my radio voice, Thomas. Superchat.html. Anyway, jump over there. You'll be able to talk to the people at the Wake Radio side and the Shaziz Radio side at the same time. So, I posted a few videos over here in the Super Chat Room chat room. Chat.
Chat. You put chat in your chat so you can play chat.
Most of these videos so far that I posted in here have to do with either the Fisher and Paykel or Samsung Smart Drive motors. These versions in these videos are the Fisher and Paykel brand. But they're the modern day new direct drive motors that you have in your front loader washing machines and dryers. Excuse me. See, in the old days they used to have a transmission and you had a belt system that would run the transmission to give it the torque and speed necessary to actually wash your clothes in the washing machine. And so, with that said, these newer motors are like a pulse DC, probably it's about two or three phase motor, but they're a pulse DC motor. And they have a lot of torque, enough torque such that they don't actually have to have any transmission any longer. It's just a direct drive. Some call them smart drives, some call them direct drives. Either way, they're pretty impressive stator motors. And I've actually seen like guys like Ryan Abrams and Terry Woodruff out there pulsing these with like 9-volt batteries. But the versions that they're pulsing are pretty much the same one, but they call them X13s, or motors that they use in like air conditioning systems, blower motors. So anyway, yeah, the reason why I posted these particular videos is because these guys here are hooking these motors up to like microwave oven transformers and pulling off some heavy duty arcs. And the one bottom one down there is not even hooked to a microwave oven transformer, yet is still pulling off a bunch of heavy duty arcs. And if you watch these videos and you pay really close attention to what's going on in there, there's a lot of power involved in what's happening. You know, granted they're driving these with little diesel engines, little gas engines. But the thing to note is that how huge these arcs are coming off of these doggone direct drive motors. So with that said, I'm always talking about not invoking Lenz's law. Whenever you you're trying
Lenz law, Lenz, you yeah. Just go back to law school.
Yeah. I'm always talking about not invoking Lenz law. Well, in order for you to get that energy off of there and be able to move it somewhere else and use it, you know, without bogging that generator down, that's also why I brought up the whole plasma issue. If you watch really closely while these arcs are going on, you're literally getting a plasma effect out in the atmosphere. So it's pretty much igniting the hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen, whatever else is in the air. It's energizing it that hot. And, you know, yeah, that's pretty much how one of them plasma cutters work out there. But take a look at those videos and see the arcs that they're pulling off of there and the capabilities of these things. And what I'd also like to note is that after this thing has been spun up and shot off all these doggone arcs, I can almost guarantee you could walk over and put your hand right on that coil and it would not be hot. And the reason being is, for obvious reasons, you're not producing eddy currents and you're not invoking Lenz's law because you're not pulling a direct load on this thing. See, when you induce a current into a coil, a wire, you're going to create a magnetic field, and that's what we need to actually turn the motor. Now, on the generator head side of it, the electron flow doesn't actually occur until you turn that light switch on. The moment you turn that light switch on, the energy that you're producing is actually making a return path right back into the generator, and then in turn is creating a second magnetic field. Some people call it back EMF. When that second magnetic field is being created, it starts to act like a brake, which starts to slow down the armature. So by taking the energy away from the generator and putting it into a completely different form where you're not directly coupled to it. Now granted, some of that energy will make it back to that generator if it can find a path. But watch this last video down there where the guy is running it off of just directly off the what in the heck is going on in there? I just got some sort of ruckus going on in my chat room. Anyway, watch the arc that's coming off of this thing, and listen really closely to the engine and the actual stator motor itself. Believe it or not, whenever stators are under load, you can start to hear a hum to it. All right, well, in this particular instance, you can hear the engine, but it's not bogging down when he's shooting that arc across there. And that's the key that I've been trying to get across to people about. If you pull that energy off of that generator, and then you send that energy into an inert gas, a noble gas, and you energize it to the plasma state, what in tarnation is going on out there?
So far it just looks like nothing, man. So
alright, well,
just throwing little emotes and whatnot around, I guess, to let people know they're in there.
Anyway, so I got me a never mind. I'll kick them to the curb if they keep it up. Alright, so basically, if I'm trying to stay up here at the doggone video so I can see where it's at. I got to scroll back up. Thanks for my distraction. All right. Also posted inside there a video link to a guy running high voltage through a spark plug, and he has a neodymium magnet attached to the end of it, and you could actually see how the plasma is interacting with the neodymium magnet, and it's pretty impressive. Now, I don't know what voltage he's actually using to create the plasma around that spark plug, but it's the key to note there is how well that spark plug is actually holding up to the temperature that's going on in that plasma. And last but not least, down there I threw in a video. It's just a little animation on a turbocharger, how a turbocharger works. Are you familiar with turbochargers, Thomas?
No, but I'm familiar with chat. claiming the name is Tesla. I was like, first off, that's not even. I don't even want to get into it. I just asked for a real first name, and he said Tesla. I was like,
all right. So anyway, basically, when
see
you
see what you did,
yeah.
You should have mentioned it.
Well, I was trying to focus in on some videos so I could explain to people this. And right. The chat started scrolling up.
Shenanigans.
Anyway.
I knew it was going to happen, man. One way or another.
Anyway, what's all this got to do with each other? See, last week we talked about some hydrogen technology. And I actually posted a video that I did where I was running a little weed eater motor backwards to use the compression of it to actually generate heat. So, if you can put all this thing together in your head, you could actually build you a generator. It'll be an electrical assist at first. You'll start the generator up. You're running an internal combustion engine backwards. First, let me jump back to the turbocharger. What a turbocharger does to your engine is basically takes and rams air, oxygen, down inside the intake portion of it. So it, what it does is it has a turbine on both sides of this thing. One is a air intake from the outside, and one is using the actual exhaust for turning the turbine. And so when you rev your engine up, the exhaust that comes out the exhaust valves goes down in through the turbine, spins the turbine up, and then the other side sucks air in, which in turn pressurizes that air. Now, in order to cool that air, the exhaust back down enough to where you can put it back in the engine without causing damage to that engine, you have a cooling system on there. Some use water coolers and some just use air core coolers. So when the exhaust is coming up out of that turbine and the air is being sucked into that, it basically pressurizes the inside of that cylinder just a little bit more and feeds it a whole lot more oxygen, thus for giving you a really good boost on the power that you've got. You understand that so far? Mm. All right, so basically you're using waste, what would have normally been wasted from the exhaust, to give you more horsepower for your engine. So if you add the turbo charge system and you add the plasma spark plugs that I was talking about there earlier, and you add in the hydrogen technology and the compression, you could literally build an engine, that an internal combustion engine, that you could start up with an electric motor just to get it warm. All right, you just use an electric motor to turn the motor same direction that it normally would be turning as if when it was running. All right, so you get this engine up to operating temperature by the heat that is created by the compression of the air inside that chamber, inside the pistons. Now, once it's up to operating temperature, then you start injecting water in a fine mist inside that cylinder. With the high voltage spark plugs on the other side, once that fine mist goes through there, you hit that high voltage arc, it's all timed out just like a regular internal combustion engine. Once that high voltage arc hits that fine mist, it's going to begin to break down the hydrogen and oxygen from the water molecule. From that point on, even if you're only hitting it when the water hits that hot piston inside there, it will produce steam that will expand. And I can't remember what the actual calculation is, but steam expands multitude times its normal volume of the water molecule. So from that point on, now you've got the engine up to operating temperature. Once the engine and the hydrogen and oxygen begin to ignite and start to combust inside the chamber and starts to run that motor, now you can take that motor and overclock the electric motor that you were, you take the engine and overclock the electric motor that you used to start it up to begin with. Once you do that, when it gets past a certain RPMs, it will begin to put electricity back into your battery system. Alright, from that point on, now you got this engine running and you're actually using the generator, the motor as the generator now. They do this in tractors and some backhoes and heavy equipment. They got what's called a motor generator. And this motor generator is basically like the starter on your car, or on your equipment there. And so we started it up with the electric motor. We've got the compression producing the heat that's heating the operating temperature of the cylinders up. We've got a high voltage arc that's actually coming in via the spark plug that is helping to separate the water molecules and raise the temperature up inside the piston. And so we're injecting the water in a fine mist, and once we get this thing up to where combustion actually begins and the engine starts to run, and now we got exhaust fumes, or exhaust gases, the heat from the exhaust gases, that we're then in turn going to run back down through a turbocharger. So now the air goes in through the turbocharger, spins up the turbines, and starts to suck in air and oxygen and rams it down inside the cylinder and basically gives you an extra boost. You see what I'm saying so far, Thomas?
Yeah.
Are you distracted with the guy in the chat?
No, I've long since stopped paying attention to that. The guy's not really causing any trouble. He's just being, resistant to giving us a real name earlier. So he says his real first name's Nick. He's finally admitted his name doesn't have Tesla in it, though. I.e., he's a fan.
Apparently. All right. Well, that's great. We're just trying to help people out, so we don't want a ruckus, you know. Anyway, look. So basically, what I just described right here is a system that you can run using hydrogen and oxygen, and be able to do it efficiently, and then basically turn what would have normally been a motor that ran it into a generator. See, these Fisher and Paykels and direct drive motors, they got a lot of torque, man. And you can actually get a whole lot of RPMs up on these things. And, you know, if you get the equipment that they use, these little Fast and the Furious cars that they build, they got aftermarket deals where they can actually go in and tune this brain and time it up perfect. You could build a hydrogen engine with off-the-shelf products right out of the gate. What do you think?
Well, I already told you could just use a gas-powered engine because it's supposed to be running on fumes that explode. And you'd either have to basically change your oxygen-hydrogen ratio to normal atmosphere, which has got a bunch of CO2 and argon and all kinds of other compounds to interfere with it to raise your octane rating. Or you're going to have to add something else to it to raise the octane rating. So that way you don't have to readjust your tuning to keep you from getting your timing and whatnot, to keep from getting pre-ignition from happening. That way it's not exploding whenever you're trying to push up to do compression instead of, you know, waits until it's actually on the downstroke to explode.
Well, you know, there's some guys out there that do some racing, these street racer guys out there. I can't remember what one of them, I think, was called Street Outlaws or something like that. They do these street races out there. There was a show that was on Dish Network, I think it is, or whatever, one of the satellite companies. We used to watch this all the time, and, man, these guys were brilliant when it comes down to tuning these cars up. I mean, they would get every ounce of power out of them things, and then some. Well, if you could get a crew like that together with some engineers, it wouldn't take long at all to actually put together an engine that basically is just an internal combustion engine, but you're taking all the good pieces of all of it and cramming it into one deal, and you're running it off of water. Now, I've heard so many different conspiracies about Stan Myers and people trying to debunk Stan Myers' work. But I'm going to tell you flat out, I have seen with my own two eyes the power of hydrogen. And I actually put a video out there called Hydrogen Danger, where we were igniting some balloons full of hydrogen. Now in the video, you can't hear the acoustic wave that was produced when you ignite that hydrogen. It sounds more like a pew, you know. But in reality, when you're standing there, because the camera microphone couldn't pick up the sound of that acoustic wave. But in reality, when you're standing there, you can not only hear distinctly sound like a doggone shotgun just went off, but you can feel the pressure wave as it comes by. I mean, that's a lot of power, man. So it don't take very much to actually get the pressure that you need for the combustion portion of the deal. So, I believe if this was done right, you could actually take some of the, recapture some, if not even possibly all of the fuel from the exhaust portion of it and recycle it back through the system. What do you think?
I think it's a possibility, so.
Well.
Don't make me pull a Bruce Willis on you here and Die Hard.
Well, look, I'm just saying, before people kick the idea to the curb, sit back and think about what I explained to you. You know, it's all of it's mechanically sound, but what I'm talking about, those turbochargers, those things are pretty amazing. You know, they're giving you almost double the horsepower that you would have had from the factory engine itself. And all it's doing is taking, you know, utilizing the waste heat and fuel from the other side, from the exhaust portion of it, to spin a turbine. Once it spins that turbine, it sucks air in from the other side, which that air is then compressed. The compressed air then in turn produces heat, because we know that when you produce, when you compress air, you get heat. That's what we talked about just a bit earlier. But you got to cool that air down before you ram it in that cylinder, obviously, because you don't want the cylinder getting hotter than it's already normally going to run. You see what I mean?
Right.
But it's pretty impressive technology, and it's already out there. It's on the store shelves, man. And the spark plugs out there, when you look at the video that I posted in there about the guy that's creating the plasma, you know, high voltage arc right there at the end of the spark plug, you know, that's more than enough to ignite that water. That's more than enough to, you don't have to go through the whole electrolysis process to separate hydrogen and oxygen from the water. That heat and that frequency that he's pumping through there is enough to do it. And so with the technology they got, such as the sonic vaporizers and atomizers and different stuff like that today, you could build the perfect spark plug like Stan Meyer's design that would take that water, pressurize it, put it in a really super fine fog mist, and inject that into that cylinder and ignite it on demand. And there you go, man. You got a doggone clean renewable energy source that it's not rocket science, man. It's all basic science. It's all basic mechanics and understanding how things work. It could be put together in short order. Wouldn't have to, you know, try to figure it all out. All you had to do is get the right crew together, the crew that knows how to tune them brains for the turbo and the ignition system of, heck, you could use a four-cylinder engine. It don't matter. And a good machinist to maybe have to customize a couple parts, access to a machine shop, and You could take less than 30 days. You could put together a generator. You need a good electrician, somebody who can take these doggone motors, these direct drive Fisher and Paykel motors, or even build their own stator. But when you look at the power that these doggone direct drive motors come out, they're a generator right out of the doggone washing machine, man. I got fortunate enough to get another one from the appliance place that I was talking about in a prior broadcast there, and so now I've got two of these things, and I already had one part milled so that it would accept a half inch pulley so that I could do tests on at different RPMs of how the voltage differs. Because if you remember, I did a video with a hard drive motor where I spun that hard drive motor up to 35,000 RPMs, and I'm not even positive it was all the way up to its full potential, but that's what the Dremel capability was, up to 35,000 RPMs. So either way, the hard drive motor was spinning I mean, backwards, bad to the bone, and it actually lit up a full strand of LEDs that you normally plug into a 120-volt outlet. Now, keep in mind, I ain't talking about a lot of current watts and amps and all that kind of stuff. The only thing that I'm concerned about is the high voltage, the frequency range at what that voltage is running at. Because I'm believing that high voltage is going to be the key to this whole entire deal. Can you add Steven to the call?
Yeah, give me a second.
Why I keep talking about high voltage is because we have a problem to overcome. We got to be able to overcome Lenz's law. Because Lenz's law is what actually is the problem with the back EMF, and then when you get the eddy currents going on, you're producing heat that eventually breaks down the insulation on the doggone electric motors or generators that eventually trashes the motor. So if you can not produce a lot of eddy currents, and if you could not produce a lot of back EMF that is slowing down that generator acting like a brake, and just take that energy away from it, number one, that generator head outside of bearing failure would last who knows how long. I mean, astronomically long time, because the only part in an electric motor that can fail is the insulation on that copper wire. If the insulation breaks down, you go from what would have normally been 1,000 turns or more down to a single turn, because it's a dead short. Now you got a dead short, and obviously that's not going to run that motor. So if you can keep that electric motor perfectly cool and using it as a generator, take that energy off of that generator head, energize an inert gas, a noble gas, into the fourth state of matter, being plasma. Now you have a totally different form of energy that's not feeding back into that generator head and destroying it. So now you got to take that energy and be able to move it away again, so that you can start putting it back into usable power. Several different ways with plasma, one of which is heat. You know, you have coiled tubing inside your reactor that when you get that plasma up to operating temperature, whatever water or liquid you put through that copper tubing is going to heat up. And then you can take that heat away. That's one way what you could use that for. You could actually get radiant energy off of the plasma. You've seen it with plasma globes, you know, how the plasma will actually follow around your fingers trying to find a path to ground. And actually, if you put a penny up on the top on the outside of that glass, you actually get a little shock to you off that deal. Have you ever tried that with a plasma ball?
No, not a penny. I think I put some aluminum foil up to it and whatnot, but it was one of those little tiny ones, so didn't really get any shock or anything. I just noticed that there was a massive lightning bolt that was shooting at that one spot, and it was almost ignoring everything else.
Well, you can actually watch it arcing across your hand when you're not actually touching the aluminum foil or whatever. You just put your finger down there, and it'll jump across your hand.
Mm-hmm.
But basically,
they make clocks like that where the hands are conductive, like a person's hand.
Yeah.
And it's behind the disc of plasma, and as it moves around, basically you seeing the hands of the clock moving, you see the arcs jumping from the center out to that tip of that hand, trying to get to it. So it looks like your hands of your clock are made out of lightning. Just cool. Making a path back to ground of some sort. Hey guys, can you hear me?
Yep. Yeah, we can hear you.
Yeah, sorry for... I pulled my USB cable out just now, and I was chatting away, and I was trying to get me edge in, but I couldn't get anything in there. Shaziz, you were talking about hydrogen earlier.
Yeah.
always use a suitable flashback arrester.
Oh, definitely.
The lid of your 2-litre hydrogen generator made out of Carlsberg beer cans, if it doesn't work properly, can shoot 30 feet in the air.
I've seen him blast back down through there, and it blew my hydrogen cell in half.
This was from a 12-volt motorcycle battery and Carlsberg beer can elements.
Right, yeah, it doesn't take much voltage. The more amperage you pump into it, the more hydrogen you're going to quickly generate.
The best advice I can give people is don't try this at home. Go to your friend's house.
But see, I think there's a big misnomer in the hydrogen community. I think that people think that they need more hydrogen than they actually do, because hydrogen, number one, it's an implosion, it's not an explosion, all right? But it has a lot of power, right? And for every action is an equal and opposite reaction. Even with an implosion, you're still going to build up pressure. Now, with the steam expansion of the water actually hitting the hot piston, and then an implosion on top of that, and then the ignition of the hydrogen and oxygen. You see what I'm? Can you visualize what's going on inside that cylinder? The way I'm explaining it.
Sure is. We tried an experiment a couple of years ago where we had just an absolutely rudimentary hydrogen generator, and we hooked it up to a I think it was a 2.5 kVA petrol generator, gasoline generator, and we could extend the fuel economy of it from 12 hours to 18 hours by bleeding hydrogen into the carburetor directly.
Yeah, so there you go. Even if at very least what Thomas was mentioning about earlier about actually putting something else in the fuel to raise up the what was the word you used, Thomas?
The efficiency.
No, there was another word he used, like when you're basically juicing up your gas to get it more octane or octane booster or something like that.
Yeah, but Tom's clever.
Yeah. But anyway, even if that, you could still basically use something like alcohol to, help to burn or whatever. But I honestly don't believe you're going to need that, you know? I think that if you wanted to, you could build a cannon that was hydrogen powered, because the power, the pressure, the wave that comes off of when the hydrogen goes off is incredible. I mean, we just filled up some balloons and with hydrogen, and then lit that thing. The ball of flame that you saw when that thing went off, and the acoustic wave, it was impressive, And that's not a whole lot of gas that we used. So I don't think you need that much in order to be able to run that engine. What do you guys think?
Well, I just mentioned to you earlier that it's got higher combustion ratio than gas, so you got to drop the octane rating anyway.
There you go.
You drop the combustion pressure anyway to match that of a gas powered engine if you want to go ahead and run it in that. So If you're not generating that much, and you just supplement it with the normal atmospheric air to reduce that should be more than enough to keep that thing running.
Well, and another thing that I want to put out there as well is that also with the electric generator that's going on, you're now generating electricity. You can take a bridge rectifier and take off some of that and use the electrolysis process as well, so that you can actually generate more hydrogen if you need it. You see what I'm saying? Like, let's say we use my process. We take the compression to raise the heat up. We shoot the water in a fine mist. We use the spark plugs to send a high voltage frequency plasma inside that chamber. And so now, if the combustion isn't quite enough, we can actually have a pulsed timer on there to hit at certain points and turn on the DC power to create a little bit of electrolysis to actually send some more hydrogen pressure up in there. You see what I mean? To actually just supplement what it was that I said the first time around?
Sure is.
Yeah.
I I went out to see a guy before who was supposedly a physicist, and he told me that hydrogen had no energy potential because it was listed number one on the periodic table of elements. So I filled up a balloon with it and set fire to it.
Well, when you burn water, you get water.
I mean, I'm kind of very much a person that observes by personal experience, and my personal experience of messing around with hydrogen led to me blowing up a hydrogen container next to my head and blowing up a hydrogen container next to somebody else's. And I did actually give them a fair warning to move at least 12 feet away from where I was working.
Well, and see, that's why the safety, what you're talking about right there, is the reason why I say that this system that I'm talking about doing here wouldn't be dangerous, because you'd be using it as you need it. You wouldn't be storing any at all. See, when I had my hydrogen deal going, it was the bubbler portion of it that actually blew up. Because whenever you want to try to, when you're producing the hydrogen, it produces pressure and it goes down and it goes through a bubbler, which kind of helped to clean it up. But then it pressurizes that chamber. And my flashback arrestor wasn't good enough, so the moment I lit that sucker, you could see a bright white flash go all the way back down into that bubbler.
Oh, yeah.
And boy, that thing just blew up, man.
I've seen people on the internet suggest that a cigarette filter is a suitable flashback arrestor. I can personally attest that it is not. Because I've done it twice.
Yeah, hydrogen is a really small molecule, so it'll squeeze through something that you normally wouldn't think it would. So I'm thinking there are materials out there like, you know, those bubbler stones that they put in fish tanks to kind of bubble up the water there?
Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, you could start off with something that like that and then put you something on the other side. You know, what I used that finally worked was I used some basically copper scrubby pad kind of deal, and compacted it really super tight inside there, because believe it or not, the hydrogen will find its way through that. And the whole idea of the thing is so that when the flames come back down there, they'll hit resistance at that copper scrubby pad, and that will keep the flashback from going any farther than that filter, that flashback arrestor. So your cigarette deal probably wouldn't work, because the material probably got hot. It might have worked the first time around, but every time it gets a flashback, it would be burning away at that material and eventually make it all the way through. You see what I mean?
Anyway, I had a question for you, Shizzes, about your plasma generator.
Yeah.
Now, you're working under vacuum with that, aren't you?
Yeah, but it don't have to be a complete vacuum. It's just you're basically reducing the atmospheric pressure down, all right?
Well, the question I wanted to ask you is, usually when you reduce atmospheric pressure, you can boil certain liquids and various elements at lower temperatures.
Yeah, so
was your plasma generator, when it was operating at a high temperature?
Yeah, that's what got me into the whole deal about moving the energy away from in the form of heat, because it was generating enough heat in there. And actually, the energy, it got so powerful that this thing literally cracked itself, man. It built up some serious pressure, and I had some really thick acrylic resin around the glass of this thing. And I think that's the only thing that kept me from getting an explosion in my face. But it cracked the entire reactor all the way around. That's how much power was inside that thing. And it actually, at one point, ate through the insulation that was for the probes that go inside there, and started arcing across itself. So it was building up enough energy in there that if I could have took that energy away quickly enough, then I wouldn't have built that pressure up in there. kind of like blowing up a balloon, you know. If you got a little pinhole in the end of the balloon, you can blow on that balloon forever and a day. It'll still expand, but it won't pop. You see what I mean?
Well, Tom, you're kind of, you've got such a broad general knowledge that there's so many things I'm ignorant on, it's not funny. I mean, are you familiar with the concept of cold fusion, and have you anything to say about it when working under a vacuum?
For cold fusion? I'm not really sure. I have my own thoughts on how that might be able to be used for alchemical purposes, not energy purposes, meaning like you've got a bunch of this material, this element, and you need another element. You could use it to convert that element into another element instead of having to go find more of that element if you're short on it.
Well, that's brilliant.
And it would take a tremendous amount of energy to do it, but with the right configuration, you could keep reducing the energy down, kind of the way they're doing with the warp drive system. They initially found they were going to have to use like the power of 20 or 30 suns to produce the enough warp field in space to just to move something the size of a little, you know, a little car around, and then they figured out how to keep changing the form and the shape so that they were only creating what they actually needed, and the rest of it they were ignoring, they were basically cutting it out, so they've got it down to where they need basically the amount of energy that's in the matter that's, say, in a VW Beetle to move a small ship around. So, or LEDs, you know, we use just the energy we need to produce the spectrum we need to see, and that's it. So,
now the reason why I wanted to ask that is there's kind of, I think it was, there was an Italian guy back about 4 or 5 years ago that was talking about a LENR, a low energy nuclear reaction, and he was claiming that he'd kind of perfected the process of cold fusion.
Well,
because that seems to be the holy grail of energy production.
I believe that we've got the technology already to do both, you know, cold fusion and this plasma generator that I'm talking about right now. I'm just trying to work with things that are already in existence, things that you can get a hold of, you know, like argon gas. You go to a welding shop, you can get argon gas.
And I told you that.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you did, because I was having a heck of a time. I tried to buy some off of eBay, and since it was coming from Australia, they wouldn't let it ship it to me. Anyway, the argon and what Thomas was talking about, being able to create different elements, I believe that the plasma inside that doggone chamber has the power to actually do that. Now, how you'd engineer that to where, you know, whatever you made inside there, you can get back out, because you'd have to be able to seal this reactor back up every time, you know, make a face that'll come off of it that you can open and close when you want, and then put your materials in there, and then use the heat from the plasma to and the vacuum to actually bind things together. You see what I mean?
Well, the reason why I mentioned it is as part of the whole mad science thing. I came across an article recently called "An Impossible Invention: Swedish Scientists Claim LENR, Low Energy Nuclear Reaction Explanation Breakthrough." So basically what they're talking about is describing matter's interaction with electromagnetic fields.
Well, and that's another good purpose of that one video that I showed. It's just a little short video, but the guy has got the spark plug and has the neodymium magnet. You can actually watch that plasma. There's a definite, there's a difference in that plasma whenever you watch it, whenever it's interacting with that magnetic field. I mean, it's a visual difference that you can see that's going on. You know, it's following those flux lines around that magnetic field of that magnet. It's pretty impressive.
Well, just to take an excerpt from the article, I'm just dropping it into the chat there. the super chat so everybody can see it. Oh no, that's not it. One second. So people know what I'm talking about. The basic idea that ponderable motive forces at resonant frequencies shake out neutrons from elements such as deuterium and lithium, and these neutrons are then captured by e.g. nickel, resulting in energy release by well-known physical laws. So these Swedish guys are kind of, they're not kind of going off the reservation with some weird ideas. They're working within the laws of accepted physics, and I think people should read through that and make their own decision, but it's definitely an interesting read. Because at the same time, she says, that's kind of similar to a lot of the stuff you're doing.
Yeah, see, that's the whole key, because when you talk about alternative energy, if you go outside the realm of the laws of physics, then everybody gets all irate on you. Now, I'm basically using everything that I know from basic science to not defy any of the laws of physics. Now, whenever I want to invoke Lenz's law, I know how to do it. And I can use that invocation of Lenz's law as a brake. So imagine if you got an electric car and you're driving down a road and you want to stop a thing. Instead of having to have brake pads, you just invoke Lenz's law and stop it on the dime. You see what I'm saying? You got electric braking going on. There's actually regenerative braking out there that whenever you when you brake, that it actually puts juice back into the battery. So it's not that we're trying to defy the laws of physics or anything. It's just that we want to use the laws of physics to our advantage instead of invoking Lenz's law on the generation portion of it. We just move the energy away that we want into a completely different state of matter, and then, you know, you see, energy can neither be created nor destroyed. That's their laws of physics under the conservation of energy. Now, so, but they do say that you can change the energy. You know, it's like the difference between water, steam, and hydrogen and oxygen. So, you know, we take a little bit of water, we boil it, and we produce steam. Well, the steam is still water. It's just expanded multitudes times what it was before. And that expansion is one of the pluses that we can use to push a piston or turn a turbine. So, taking the plasma and using the heat of that plasma at the core, at the center of it, it's a mini sun inside of a vacuum. And we've got technologies these days to where we can seal glass around it. It doesn't even have to be glass. I mean, proof positive is the magnetron out of the microwave oven. It is a plasma reactor. You can't see inside there, but if you could see inside there, you would be getting visible light. Light is heat and heat is light, vice versa. So with that said, you know, if you use your microwave oven, then take the deal off and put your finger on that doggone deal, it's going to be the equivalence of putting your finger on like a 150 watt bulb or more. It's going to be hot. It gets really hot in there. And so what I'm talking about isn't no different. If you took that magnetron and you built a reactor, take the magnetron, scaled it up, built a reactor out of this, you could take 120 volts AC, boost that 120 volts AC up to 2,000 volts, use that to heat up a tungsten element inside there and create a microwave, or instead of trying to create the microwave, redesign it just a slight amount to where all you're using that tungsten element for is a heater, and then turn around and whatever liquid you circulate through a coil tubing that's inside this reactor would be heated up. You could take that energy away without sending any energy back to the other side. You see what I mean?
And not really. Well, again, I'm not that smart.
All right, look at a light bulb. Let's take a light bulb for example. You get you an old headlight off of any automobile out there that's burnt out, all right, completely bad. The element's broken half. It won't. You plug it to your battery, it won't work anymore. Get you a 20,000 volt oil burner igniter and run it off the same 12 volt system. Send that energy into the prongs of the bulb, and you will watch that light bulb will light back up. Even though it won't work in the car without that voltage, it will still light back up. That's what I've been using for a vacuum spark gap on my coil system down in my lab for years. I've been using an old headlamp that was burned up. You can't plug it to a battery and light it up. But if you run 20,000 volts through there, that 20,000 volts is enough. And we're not talking a lot of amperage either. It's in the milliamp range. And so you run that 20... Sure, yeah.
We talk about mad science. Well, not once but twice when I was about 14, I did an experiment with breaker circuits in our school science lab, where I got a paper clip, I cut it in half, connected an elastic band with it, plugged it into the plug socket, turned it on, and touched both sides.
Yikes.
And I cleared 6 feet before I landed. And in fairness, the science teacher showed me where the fuses were so I could reset them myself once I'd recovered.
Sounds like my science teacher in the capacitor incident. He passed around his capacitor, and I was being a little wise guy and didn't know if this thing had a little bit of a charge left to it. And he said, he was telling us about it, he said, now be real careful with this. And so I was being a wise guy, and I took my two thumbs and I put them over the deal, and I said, what happens if I do this? And I put my thumbs on that sucker, and I got the crud knocked out of me. I was laying in the floor. He comes running over real quick and picks up his capacitor, dusts it off, and says, oh, it's okay. And I said, what about me? He said, that's what happens if you do that.
Yeah.
But anyway, the key to what I'm talking about is, with the technology like Robert Murray Smith doing with graphene technologies of supercapacitors and high voltage, and you know, being able to change energies, static energies, whatever, you know, we have the capabilities right now. We have every single thing we need right now. As long as we can get everybody to the understanding that that energy can be changed and then reconverted back into whatever you want. You know, you don't run your AC appliances off the DC battery directly. You're running it through an AC inverter, which basically just changes the pattern of which the wave's coming through, you know. It turns it on and off, back and forth. So you're getting an AC wave instead of a direct current going through there. So you're changing that energy. It's changing frequencies multiple times inside that doggone inverter before it ever even gets to that appliance. And it can actually be tuned to whatever hertz range you need to run that without burning it up. So that's what I'm talking about. And then taking there's different chemistries. We could pick the best materials to actually build this thing that wouldn't deteriorate. You could build it to last. You could build it to last. You could build it to run on water. You wouldn't even have to run it on water, man. Just about anything out there, if you atomize it fine enough, it'll burn. You know what I'm saying? Have you ever lit coffee creamer? You sprinkle some coffee creamer down over the top of a cigarette lighter and watch that big old flame come up off of that thing?
You can do it with any fine powder.
Yeah.
There's a lot of grain silos all over the planet where they've got excessive anti-static devices connected to them, and I've actually seen a couple of reports of people that have been killed where they've tried smoking in the bottom of a grain silo. Dust is dangerous because it carries a static charge in certain circumstances.
Well, there's another plus about this whole hydrogen thing that I'm talking about. See, some people, the only thing they think about when they think about hydrogen technology is actually burning the fuel. Well, there's also a process that whenever this hydrogen and oxygen are recombining, actually releases electricity. So you could combine the combustion portion of it and then the recombination portion of it by building your condenser such that when your condenser's cooling it down, as this these molecules are recombining on the other end of that, you could start storing that energy up. You see what I mean?
Yes.
So there's different ways to use the hydrogen. You know, and that little video that I did where I'm running the doggone thing with a with an electric drill and running backwards to raise the operating temperature up, that was just a little weed eater motor. But you could see that the temperature on that, I can't remember what the Celsius range of it, but it was about, before it was all said and done, I got it up to about 160 degrees. And I could have got it up to the full 180, even up to 220 if I wanted. It just, the speed at which I'm spinning this thing and the duration, you know, it took a little while to warm it up, but it once it got up to its operating temperature, it took less and less energy to maintain it. And then when the water is still being injected in there, you could watch in this video as this motor began to buck. Now, one of two things is going on in there. Either it's trying to separate the water molecules into its hydrogen and oxygen, or you're developing a water hammer that is basically pushing that piston. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
When the cylinder gets hot enough, and that water hits it, it flashes into steam. The steam expands multitudes times its volume, the water molecule. And so with that said, that pressure build up inside there would actually push that piston down. So at the very, very, very least, it was a crude steam engine. All right? And it all started off with running that electric motor.
With the water hammer, would you call that a kinetic energy device?
Well, yeah, you could. You see, water hammers in some instances, or most instances, are bad. Because back whenever I was a boiler technician in the Navy, you would hear these pipes banging, right? They'd build up a little bit of moisture. That moisture would go down, and you know, because the pipes aren't perfectly straight or curved or anything. They got corners and stuff. And so the water would literally go down that pipe and slam into the wall. And you hear this big bang, bang. And it'd drive you freaking nuts. And so even back in the days when they used to use boilers to heat the radiators in old buildings, if you ever go around an old building that still uses the radiators, you'll hear that banging every so often. But there's a guy that figured out how to use that effect by spinning water. He designed a rotor that has holes inside there on the side of the rotor that was deliberately designed to create a man-made water hammer. And that
was that a guy in Pittsburgh?
I'm not sure.
I think I brought that onto the show about 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, you probably did.
I mean, I was really interested in that at the time, because you could run that off of a very, very low energy DC motor.
Yeah. And so if you're able to heat water that hot using that particular deal right there, you could also incorporate that system into preheating your water before it ever even goes in the cylinder. You see what I mean?
I'll tell you why I say that. There's an Irish company that's found a way of attaching a device to your tap. I'm just looking for the link now. Where it's just a little device that sits on your tap like a mini water hammer. And when you turn your tap on, instead of an immersion heater, where you've got a huge 22, 24-inch element that takes about half an hour to heat up your water, you turn on your tap and you get instant hot water.
Well, there you go, man. See? All this we're talking about, this isn't science fiction. It's science fact. This is proven technology. It's out there. Raymond brought over a sonic mister, and it uses a circuit board to send out a sonic wave that basically causes the water to turn into a fog. And it don't use that much energy to do it. So taking all these things in consideration, we could literally build a generator that would run on water efficiently, that you could either use for driving your car or even, heating your house or whatever. It's in my mind, it's so doggone simple, it's just ludicrous. The only key portion of this whole deal is getting people together to build the doggone thing. The technology's there. It's been there all along. And I hope that somebody takes this doggone broadcast and actually tries it. And I don't care if they steal the idea and go out there and build it and make $1 billion. I don't care. Just as long as if somebody does it. Because once that technology hits the market, these ideas that everybody's looking for free and alternative and green, clean, renewable energy, green energy, it's right there. It's been there all along. It's static electricity, man. Heck, you could use the Van de Graaff portion of the deal to actually produce a static charge. That don't take a lot of torque to actually produce a static charge. The Wimshurst generator, the Lord Kelvin design, basically taking the vortex where you're spinning water around. They call it cavitation. You can heat up water with cavitation as well. See, what would normally be something you don't want in an engine, you use that for what you do want, like that turbo deal. That's what the turbo does. It takes doggone the exhaust off of the engine, and it circulates turbine, which on the opposite side has a turbine that sucks in air and compresses that air. And actually have to have relief valves on there because you don't want it above 6 or 8 PSI because otherwise you'll blow something up. So they got ways to regulate the doggone air pressure that's being compressed by the deal. They got ways to cool that air back down so that they can put that what they want, the fresh oxygen, down inside that piston and get it more horsepower. They're talking 2 times the power of the factory engine. That's impressive.
I found the article I was looking for. It's kind of more of a sales page than an informational page. But if you look at the certification and product specifications, for instance, the hot water tap, the power voltage is 220 volts, frequency 50, 60 hertz. If rated power is 2 to 3 kilowatts, it can... give you a flow from a half-inch pipe size of 2 to 2.5 litres a minute with a water temperature from 30 to 60 degrees Celsius with a pressure of 0.04 to 0.6 MPa. That's kind of impressive.
Yeah, it is.
As with every invention, like when you buy a printer, they don't give you a USB cable to connect it to your computer. You have to buy that separately. It requires 2 to 3 kilowatts of energy to work, and you have to buy the plug separately.
Well,
sorry, this is my pet peeve.
All of what I'm talking about could actually be built in just about any average shop. I don't have milling equipment. If I had milling equipment, I wouldn't even be talking about it. I'd do it and pop a video up out of there. What I'm hoping is to reach somebody out there who has access to a machine shop that really seriously wants to build an alternative energy device. I call it mad science for a reason because the technology's there, the science is there, and you can't get people motivated to do it while the government sits around and complains and wants to tax you to death over stupidity, over bogus science. And the save the planet people want to save the planet, but nobody wants to get together and say, hey, this guy over here might have a good idea. At least try it. I mean, it's worth it. If the planet's going to die anyway, then what do you got to lose, man? You see what I mean?
Shaziz, we need to move past the low energy or free energy device and build a free energy house.
Well, I agree. And it's all there.
If it works for one part, it works for all parts.
Well, this engine that I'm talking about building right here, number one, the waste heat off of your engine, your car engine outside, would be more than enough to heat your entire house. All right, there's enough waste engine heat that you could heat your entire house. You could actually run your car all night long, take the water, off of that thing and circulate. They do it in school buses all the time, man. There's a 65-passenger school bus has like 3 or 4 heater cores down the back. It's got a long length of hose that goes all the way down the back. And you turn those things on, when those things get up to operating temperature, which is probably about 220 degrees, they will run you out of there. The doggone heaters are so efficient inside them school buses. When they get up to operating temperature, it is hot inside there. And so that same technology could be used. If you could sit there and run your car all day long out there, if you could actually afford the fuel, you could heat your entire house with just your car. You could power your house with your car. All right? But the problem what we got is that, first off, a regular gasoline engine, you can't let it idle for long periods of time because the cylinder, the piston in the cylinder is only going up like halfway inside there when it's at idle speed. So unless that cylinder is running up and down the full length of that, the piston's running up and down the full length of that cylinder, it's actually, that ring is actually going to start to grind a groove inside the cylinder, right? And so it basically wears out your cylinders fast if you try to sit there and let it idle. Now, the best part of how to repair that is to switch over to diesel. Now you got a diesel engine that the fuel is actually lubricating the cylinder walls. So you can let a diesel engine idle all day long and not have to worry about that problem. All right, well, diesel engines also have their drawbacks, such as the smell that comes off a diesel. But then you can take that same diesel engine and you can run it off of French fry oil, and instead of having to smell the doggone diesel, you smell French fries. You see what I mean?
Amusing side note to biofuels, which is kind of what you're talking about. Back in the early noughties, when people started converting their vehicles to run on waste oil, they actually created what they called the toast police in England.
Ah, go around sniff your exhaust.
Yeah, they had specially trained dogs that would sniff your exhaust, and if it smelled like toast, then you'd have to prove that you had a valid certificate for a biofuel run taxi or vehicle or whatever.
See, ain't that ridiculous?
There's something else I want to draw attention to. If we're running out of oil, how come the crude spot prices for the 8th of February 2016 is $29 per barrel?
Well,
you would have thought if something's running out that it would be a high price, not a low one.
Yeah, it's called supply and demand. If you ain't got very much and somebody wants it, then it costs more. So
now, is it running out, or are they just trying to manufacture a system of false scarcity?
Well, if you think about the process of how they said that oil is actually done, all right? Well, if you think that dinosaurs is what actually produced all this oil and it's all in pockets and there's only so much of it, then you just don't know basic science, because there's so many different carbon-based beings, plants, whatever on this doggone planet, that whenever it rots and it's under pressure and under heat, which our Earth is continuously heating and moving and pressurizing, it's producing oil as fast as we're using it. You're never going to run out of oil. I don't care what anybody says out there. If somebody out there telling you that, we only got like 20 years of oil left, then they don't know the process. You can produce oil in your doggone lab within 20 minutes. You can have crude oil. It's no big deal. All right, but the whole key to all of this is that everybody keeps complaining about fossil fuels, which in itself is a misnomer. But either way, if you're going to complain about it, and then somebody's going to give you an answer, a potential solution to the problem where you don't have to burn fossil fuels, you can burn anything else. And then you're still not, you're not getting it, you're not on the bandwagon, well, then you're complaining for nothing. You know, these wars that's going on over there in the Middle East over resources, and everybody fighting over oil money, and you know, over in Africa, blood diamonds and all the minerals, the people that fight over all day long, every day, without fail. Every bit of what they're all fighting for, it's being made as we speak. I mean, you're not going to run out of diamonds. You're not going to run out of it because there's so much carbon and coal and all that kind of stuff. A diamond is pressurized coal, man. It's heated up, pressurized, and then eventually works its way to the surface. So there's more being made as everybody's fighting over it. Just like there's more oil being made as everybody's fighting over it. Just like nature's filtering the water as everybody's polluting it. This world is a self-contained biosphere of epic proportions, a thermoelectric generator that has more power than we could ever use in an entire lifetime, and yet we got an energy crisis. Really? I just want to jap-slap some people around this planet because it just drives me freaking bonkers that we can't get our act together. We're in the year 2016, and we're running around talking about charging people to breathe because they're putting out carbon dioxide, and then we want to charge the farmers for the doggone methane that their cows are producing when they fart and burp. I mean, come on, man, let's go in the cork business. Put a cork in one end of the cow and a cork in the other end of the cow. When the cow blows up, they'll be hollering about that too.
Well, she says there's something you need to know about diamonds. In the European Union, there's two or three institutions that are certified to grade diamonds. And if you don't have a diamond assessment certificate, it's very difficult to sell it. And you've got a crowd called De Beers in Amsterdam. And I used to live in Holland. And what they do is they stockpile all the mined diamonds, basically to control the market. It's crazy, there's billions of diamonds on the planet. And they're all of varying qualities and sizes and carats and all the rest of it. But they are not as scarce as we're led to believe.
Well, ATF, alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. Hi guys, you guys out there listening in, listen to me. I'm going to say something rude. Alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. They are scientific Nazis, man. Alright, because you got to come out there, you got to regulate alcohol. They tried that during the Prohibition. That didn't work out so well. So they had to legalize it. But now they still got to have some sort of regulation on it. Because alcohol, you know, somebody might get intoxicated. Well, alcohol is a good fuel. I mean, they put it in little go-karts all the time. Tobacco, that's something that just comes right up out the ground, you know. You could grow your own tobacco, right? But you got to regulate it. You see that anything that people want, it's not things that people don't want. Like a diamond that might have a scratch in it. Oh, big deal. So what? Still a diamond to me, you know. But anything that people want, coffee, tea, whatever, somebody's going to find a way to tax it. And that is the ludicrousy of our entire system out there. You can put a solar panel up, and you can supplement the power grid, the energy grid, and actually at certain points start feeding energy back into the grid. Same thing you can do with wind power. Same thing you can do with hydroelectrics. But once again, the money scheme of the whole deal doesn't want you doing that because it takes money out of their pocket. It basically jostles their system, man. Can't have people being self-independent because we need the money to pay taxes for the tax money so we can go over to war and fight with somebody over some fossil fuel that we say we don't want. We got to reduce our footprint. There's tons of coal in this.
I mean, America is lucky enough to have a guy called Henry Kissinger. And during the 1960s, he went to the world's biggest oil-producing countries and said, we're going to give you billions of dollars, but there's a couple of caveats. One, you've got to buy and sell in dollars. And two, a certain percentage of what we give you needs to be returned to us to pay off our national debt. So when oil's at $30 a barrel, America is not doing well.
No, they're doing a good job of dumbing down the people. They're doing a good job of destabilizing and basically getting everybody fighting amongst each other. They're doing a good job of putting the police state in there. See, for all the people out there in this world that think that we won the Revolutionary War and the Civil War and we got our Declaration of Independence, we're still under the crown. We never left the doggone crown. They just knew that they wasn't, they didn't want to fight no more, so they figured out a way to come in the back door. And so that's why we got all the things we got today. Right? So we're all under the same doggone crooked infrastructure, and we all know it. And the only way that this is ever going to get resolved is when the people stand up and start building these devices for themselves. You know? It's a knowledge. You're going to have to get educated and learn how to do stuff before all heck breaks loose. And then while you got somebody talking about, we got to reduce our carbon footprint, and they're over on the other side of the planet bombing somebody into the Stone Age to fight over some sort of oil rights or natural gas or stuff like that, you got to ask yourself why. Why are you supporting that? Because that natural gas that's over there is over here too. The oil that's over there is over here too. It's in your towns. It's in your cities. It's underneath your ground. This earth produces this stuff from the waste products, from dead and dying fish, from dead and dying plants. There is so much resources out there, it's flat out ludicrous to be fighting over it. And everybody got, oh, the population, man. We're overpopulated.
There's a very simple question I need to ask. I like to ask people about oil. How many dinosaurs, even 350 million years ago, 100 million years ago, were 20,000 feet below the surface of the Earth?
That's a good question.
I mean, were they kind of giant cave moles?
Well, they turned into goo, and the goo just kind of like worked its way down, you know, because of gravity and all that kind of stuff. So
there's oil floats.
Yeah, well, there goes my theory.
No, I'm not buying it. I mean, yeah, we've had upheavals, we've had changes in the land masses, but I still cannot work out how a forest that was once on land and the animals that lived on it too managed to end up significant distances below the surface of the Earth.
Well, the fossils out there and the oil pockets and all that kind of stuff could be summed up with one story called the Great Flood, which just about every single society out there will agree that at some point in the world's history there was this Great Flood that basically put everybody underwater and pressurized a bunch of stuff, and very few people made it through the whole deal, but then they repopulated.
Well, there is a scientific experiment and survey that's currently going on, that parts of the US that were compressed by the last ice age about 15,000 years ago are still springing back. So land masses are actually rising back up millimeters per year over tens of thousands of years.
Yep.
Since the last ice age, to return to their previous level, because they were compressed by billions and billions of tons of ice from the glacier.
I want to ask all the global warming freaks out there a question.
Are you mad?
Well, that's a given there. But first off, they always like to quote the laws of physics when it comes to alternative energy. They always like to like throw it up in your face. Oh, this is against the second law of thermodynamics. It's against the law of conservation of energy. You can't do that. But the conservation of energy law clearly states that energy can neither be created nor destroyed. So where does it go? All right, now here's the deal. If the planet's heating up and the water finally gets hot enough that it flashes into steam and basically goes up into the air, and we know that the higher you get up off the ground, the colder it gets, the closer you get to space. It's chilly up there. So with that said, steam, when it hits cool air, will condense back into water and do what? It will rain. As the rain is falling down, that water being falling through the atmosphere, the hydrogen and oxygen and nitrogen in the atmosphere, it produces a static charge, which in turn begins to crystallize either in ice, and ice crystals rubbing up against each other also building up a static charge, so you got the Lord Kelvin effect, and some other things going on where you start getting lightning bolts jumping from the ground to the atmosphere whenever power gets high enough on one side that it can actually ionize the air in between the earth and ground and give that energy a path, the negative electrons to the positive, and then pow, you got lightning. So in this whole process that they, the so-called global warming crybabies out there, yeah, and I said it, crybabies, get off of it. Anyway, the doggone global warming freaks don't even understand basic science. When water falls, it has a cooling effect. It cools down. So, we ain't going to run out of water either. Not going to run out of oil. There's no chemistry that's ever been made on there. If you burn wood, you still have something left over. It's wood ash. It gets put right back into the system. Every single thing out here that you use is coming back out in some other form or fashion. Those other forms of fashion put together with other chemistry will give you back exactly what you had before. If everything on this planet is carbon-based and you end up with carbon soot after you done burnt your log, then that carbon gets recycled back into the system again. So you ain't going to run out of it. You're not going to run out of sand. You're not going to run out of glass. You're not going to run out of water.
It's... kind of the current argument from what I would call the controlled climate change crowd, because they are controlled. I mean, there's probably very good people and well-meaning people that are concerned about what's going on, but they seem to claim that if CO2 in the atmosphere increases above 350 parts per million, it's going to melt the polar ice caps, which is going to release large amounts of methane into the atmosphere, which is going to cause a catastrophic effect. Well, if we want to reduce the amount of CO2 going into the atmosphere, let's get rid of all parliaments. Because we breathe in oxygen and we breathe out CO2. So why don't those guys just shut the hell up and get on with it?
Yeah, because the more they talk, the more CO2 would be in the air too, right? That's just speeding it up. I'd be out there jaw jacking.
Seriously, if we wanted some thermal energy systems, then we should just stick the collectors above every legislative body on the planet, and I tell you what, we would never have to pay an electricity bill again.
Yep.
Let them waffle as much as they like, because all that hot air is an unlimited and untapped source of energy.
Well, the Earth recycles, man. You know, that. People's always talking about you recycling. The Earth recycles everything. There's nothing that we've ever mixed together that nature can't deteriorate. You know, if you're not using it, nature will take it back. It don't matter what it is. A regular steel I-beam or something like that, it'll oxidize, rust away, and basically go back into the Earth. Plastic, same exact thing. Aluminum, same exact thing. Now, some of them take just a hair bit longer than others, but nature will take it down. I don't care what it is. Go out there and look at the doggone piece of plastic that was flexible when you started, sat out there in the sun for a while, and the UV rays ate into it, and finally this thing is like so brittle it just snaps when you touch it. And like a plastic milk carton, it'll just crumble in your hands after been sitting out in the weather. So nature done getting rid of it. That's all there is to it. So we ain't got no energy crisis. We ain't got no resource crisis. We got a common sense crisis because people can't use their doggone head to understand it. Whoever or whatever created this fish tank that we're living in knew what they was doing and made it a self-contained biosphere because they figured that we'd probably be too stupid to get it all figured out, man. That's what I'm saying. Alright, well...
There's a means to find a solution to anything, but just constantly talking about it and not doing anything about it is... it doesn't make sense to me. You know, at some point, In project management, you have a start date, you have an end date, and you have an expected outcome. But what do we get?
Well, that's the whole thing is putting it on the table where people know it's possible and getting people motivated to actually working together. For anybody out there who feels the need to call me how stupid I am, tell me how stupid I am, or try to debunk what I'm saying, or quote the laws of physics with me and all that kind of stuff, I'm challenging you right now. Put up or shut up. Build it, and if it doesn't work, then I'll eat my hat. Alright? If you sit there and you listen to what it is that I've been saying all this doggone time and all these things that all these people on this show has been pointing out to you day after day after day, showing you the things that you can do with things that already exist on this planet, the way that the planet works, the fact that we're floating in a sea of energy and we can't utilize that in a clean and orderly fashion to where everybody has food and clothing and shelter and everything needed. We got everything on this planet necessary to take care of every single living individual on this planet and live a decent life. But the stupidity of it all is that we're over there fighting in the Middle East or all over the planet for whatever resources somebody else has got, and people are dying. And in my mind, it's a waste. It's complete and utter waste. Now, we got the technology. Somewhere on this planet we have the tools. Let's get it done. You know, somebody. If you think I don't know what I'm talking about, then test me. Try it. Build it. If it don't work, if it doesn't do what basic science says it'll do, then let's move on to what does work. We're still burning. We're still boiling water for steam to turn turbines because of the steam pressure. But we're doing it in a form where we're taking natural radioactive material, spinning it up in the centrifuges, and creating a highly radioactive rod. And then we're boiling water with it, running through some old 1800s or prior technology to turn a turbine. So we've got just about every generation involved in there. We got modern technology with ancient technology, with middle age technology, whatever, and we're making electricity. There's still a dam over there that has hydroelectrics going on where they're rushing water down through there and they're making electricity. Once those machines were built, those folks, all they had to do from that point on is maintain it. They're sitting on a gold mine.
Shaziz, before GlaxoSmithKline, was GlaxoSmithKline welcome? I worked in a place in Kent in England called the Wellcome Foundation. It was a drug testing place, but I was working as a scaffolder's mate. And what we'd do is we'd build the framework so people could go up and maintain a lot of the equipment on this pharmaceutical production site. And I actually spent time in the gas turbine room, natural gas turbine, for generating electricity. And believe me, the amount of noise that produced was excessive.
Yeah.
You'd have a pair of fully padded headphones on to stop your hearing getting damaged. And it still bled through. I mean, there was no getting away from it. And that was in 1990. And that's got, 26 years ago now. But they're still using it. Not in the same place, because they've closed it down and they've redeveloped it, but they're still using a similar technology 26 years later. 26 years ago, we barely had mobile phones. So why hasn't energy production and energy generation fundamentally changed since the 70s?
Well, because the infrastructure works good for those who own it, you know. It's the average Joe.
I'm talking about 90s technology, but this wasn't new technology.
No, none of it is. You know,
moving on, they keep banging on about let's save the planet. Well, no amount of money on the on the planet is going to save the planet if they don't stop the destructive methods that they use.
Well, that's why guys like us are dangerous to the system, because we're pointing it out. There is a better way. I mean, doggone it. You know, if you're going to holler about polluting the planet, then do something about it, for Pete's sake. It's 2016. Catch up with the program. You got people are running around with cell phones and technology where they're all distracted and they can surf the internet and all that kind of stuff, and they're watching all these stupid people beat each other up on video or whatever. They're doing ignorant stuff, and then to sit around and want to be an armchair activist afterwards. I hold up a doggone wooden stick with a paper sign and say, "Save the trees, save the trees." You idiot.
I was talking to a friend of mine the other day, and he said, "I haven't got a clue what you're talking about." So I sent him a bunch of YouTube videos that had two main themes. People getting hit in the love junk by footballs and various objects and kittens. And I said, "Watch that, mate. I'm sure you'll enjoy it."
Well, that's probably more the mentality of everybody that does. Just look, if you're one of those folks out there that's supposedly an environmentalist and you care about the planet and you're all worried that global warming is going to cause global warming / climate change / climate disruption, blah blah blah, whatever, cry me a river. I've heard it a billion times and I don't believe it. We got the technology to solve the deal. If you really want to protest, go protest the doggone manufacturers and ask them why it is that they're not building these devices that we're talking about.
No, sure is. Instead of standing outside of a coal-fired power station, annoying people that are just basically trying to feed their families, go and stand outside the parliament that regulates the power station and protest there.
Yeah. These idiots will stand right next to the doggone ocean. Miles and miles and miles and miles and miles of visible water. And they will holler about how they ain't got fresh water to drink. They don't understand how nature filters water. They don't understand about desalination. They don't understand how to get water that comes out of the ocean to drink. But back in 1984, we had onboard desalination plants on the ship where we was actually drinking seawater. And doggone it, if it can be done in 1984, why can't it be done in the year 2016? Are you kidding me? But that's what they holler about. So we talk about burning water for fuel. Oh, you can't burn water for fuel because we're running out of fresh water and it takes a long time for the earth to make fresh water. Doggone idiot.
Stephen Gibbon just put in a good point there in the chat. If the Earth was so unsustainable as they claim, everything would be made to last as long as possible, and built-in obsolescence would be illegal.
And how, brother? And how? Planned obsolescence, kicked to the curb. We build a light bulb that lasts forever.
See, if we have things that are designed to last, I mean, you can go back to the 1960s, 1970s, and buy a Hobart food mixer, which has been, in fairness, it might have been sent back to the factory for refurbishment, kind of replacement cleaning and the rest of it. But it is probably still as good as the day it was made, because it was made to last.
There are.
Whereas you buy a food mixer nowadays, you're lucky if you get 12 months out of it before it goes in the bin.
There are frying pans from the 1800s that people still cook on. There are dehydrators. Well, yeah, it's probably those two. But there are doggone, what do you call them, pressure cookers. Now, let's not get into the whole blowing people up pressure cookers. Everybody, that's stupid. All right, look. There are pressure cookers from the 1800s that are still, early 1900s at the very least. I don't know the actual date that a pressure cooker was designed. But they still work. There's really nothing that goes wrong with them. You know? And all of that stuff everything, man, like Steve said, you go back in time and you find the stuff that they made back then, they made it to last. You know? It was quality stuff. And because we got all this pretty much disposable camera, disposable this, disposable that, disposable cars, you know, if you so much as get a doggone dent on the fender of some of these newer cars, it's totaled. The insurance just totals it out. You gotta buy a new car. It's cheaper to buy a new car than repair the one you just damaged. Is that stupid or what?
I thought it was kind of amusing when they were making cars with plastic bodywork.
Yeah.
Because you've always got some idiot that, you know, is kind of a major fan of Dunkin' Donuts that wants to lean against your plastic paneled car.
Yeah.
And suddenly you're driving down the road and you've got no wing.
Well,
I've actually seen that happen.
Oh, I believe it. I believe it. The cars these days is plastic, aluminum, and just cheaply made. You know, you take an old 57 Chevy, it's got a fender on it that you can bang on that fender, not have to worry about denting it. You have to do something serious to dent
it. There is in principle, a reasonable argument of having crumple zones in vehicles. Because if you do hit a pedestrian with a 57 Chevy, you know, they're going to be scraped off the road.
Yeah.
But if you hit somebody with a 2016 Renault with plastic bodywork, that's a crumple zone that will spread the force of impact and cause significantly less damage.
Well, you know, they actually have devices nowadays that are proximity sensors. They used to call them curb finders back in the day. But you could actually build a digital system that would... They got cars out there right now. They've advertised it on TV that automatically brake when they get too close to something.
Well, I know you're kind of fond of the whole creationist principle, Shaziz. But as far as I'm concerned, anybody that's stupid enough to stand in the middle of a road when a 57 Chevy is coming up towards you is Darwinian evolution in action.
Well, yeah, and then all you got to look, all you got to do is, if people want people to be safe, then they need to drive safely. Like every time I take my daughter to work in the morning.
Shaziz, I've seen people wandering around in the middle of a road with a perfectly good footpath next to it.
Yeah.
And I say to them, are you retarded? Well, is there something wrong with you that you feel that a footpath that is built explicitly for the purpose of your safety is not to be used, and you stagger around in the middle of the road like some moronic idiot?
Well,
this is designed for vehicles, this is designed for pedestrians.
When I'm taking
what is
my
wrong with you that you cannot comprehend that if you stand in the middle of the road, sooner or later a vehicle may be coming in it at a velocity that's going to cause you serious injury. Now get off the road.
Yeah, when I'm taking my daughter to work in the morning, the speed limit is 65 miles per hour. I don't know what that equals in kilometers, but either way.
It's roughly 100 kilometers an hour. 63 miles an hour is 100 kilometers an hour.
Yeah, so when I'm cruising along at that speed, and that's the speed limit on that particular road, I got people passing me doing 70, 80, 90 miles an hour, and they're right on each other's bumper, and they're changing lanes, weaving in and out, trying to get around each other. And then they wonder why at some point somebody doesn't drive so well and pulls out in front of the wrong person at the wrong time, and you got an accident. So, once again, it all boils back down to common sense. If you're going to drive like an idiot, then you're going to end up getting in a wreck, period.
Well, it comes to more than that. If you're standing in a road designed for cars, don't complain if one hits you.
Yeah, exactly. So, anyway, I think...
And you're legislating against vehicles. Oh, well, I mean, they came up with this bananas idea that you'd have to drive at 30 kilometers an hour everywhere in Dublin City Centre.
Well, you know what? Well, if you go over to Europe...
There's two reasons why that's a bad idea. One, it actually uses more fuel, and it was the loony left Green Party that presented it. Oh, well, we have to have everybody slow down.
Yeah.
To 30 kilometres an hour. I can cycle a bicycle faster than 30 kilometres an hour.
Well, you know what? My brother, he was in the military over in Germany, and he got out there on the autobahns out there, and they don't have speed limit out there. And you know, they have less wrecks and less fatalities than they do over here in the United States, where we have speed limits like 65 and 55, 70.
And she says, I've been to the autobahns in Germany. I have a friend there. He took me over there a number of years back on my motorbike, and we went down the autobahn absolutely flat out. And I was doing 200 kilometers an hour, which is equivalent to roughly 125, 126 miles per hour. And I got overtaken by a diesel van. That's humiliating, that is.
Yeah, my brother, he had him a Porsche. And, you know, he thought he had it all, man. He's out there cruising right along, you know, doing pretty much the same thing you talk about. And he got passed up by things like Lamborghinis and Ferraris and Audis and all kinds of other cool exotic cars over there.
Yeah, but it wasn't a commercial goods van that overtook their sports car.
Yeah, he probably would have gave up at that point.
Yeah, well, I got me revenge though, because I passed the German family while smoking a cigarette at 200 kilometers an hour. That was kind of amusing from my perspective. I waved to them, and they kind of waved back, and they just looked at me, as if to say, yeah, well, it was kind of a stupid thing to do, but I was young and I was ignorant and stupid. But this idea that driving slower makes it safer is fundamentally true, in the respect that if your vehicle is not up to the road conditions, not properly serviced, not properly maintained, it is more prone to mechanical or other failures. And when failures occur, accidents occur. But what is more deadly than speeding is difference in speed.
Yeah.
If you have a speed limit of, say, 65 miles an hour, and you've got one idiot that's driving at 30 miles an hour.
Yep.
Doesn't take a great scientist to work out what the difference in velocity is if you come round the corner at 60 miles an hour, safely below the maximum limit, and somebody's doing half of your speed because A, they can't drive, B, they're ignorant and won't drive, or C, they're just ludicrously annoying.
Well, if you ever want your adrenaline to flow, go take a vacation in Florida and drive the speed limit and find out how many times the elderly will pull out of their driveway right in front of you while you're going 55 and do 5 or 10 miles an hour right in front of you.
I've got a better idea than that. Try driving through Dublin City Centre at 7 o'clock in the morning on a motorbike. That's interesting.
You want to see something exciting? Go over to Japan and watch how they drive from stoplight to stoplight. It will boggle your mind that they ain't got tons and tons of wrecks. But these guys, from start to finish, they zip from one stoplight to the next stoplight. Wink, wink, wink. See, over here, you're supposed to look left and look right and then look left again to make sure it's good to go across the traffic. When you go over to Japan to visit, you can get right across traffic. But number one, you better wait for that little white hand thing, the light to shine before you try to cross. But number two, if you are stupid enough to try to get across that road, you better be looking left, looking right, looking left, looking right, looking left, looking right, back and forth as fast as you can, and run like you know what, because you're going to get mowed down.
Well, I went to Japan for my honeymoon. And it's an interesting place. I think everybody should go and see it once in their life.
Yeah, I love it over there.
But what they have in Germany as well, which is kind of interesting, is through a residential area or maybe a town or a city, you may have a really long road with crossing points, say, every kilometre or so. But if you exceed the speed limit, even when the light's green, if you go for that green light above the speed limit, you can watch it. And we did an experiment with this on our motorbikes, just doing 2 or 3 miles per hour above the speed limit. So we weren't acting dangerously, but just to see what would happen. And every single traffic light in 5, 6, 7 kilometers of road will turn red. So if you go above that speed limit, you're going to spend 10 times the amount of time trying to get through that section of road because it's triggered an alarm system which will make every other one turn red.
Till everybody slows back down.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
And we got abused by the local Germans greatly when they realised what we were doing. Because they were on the road as well.
Alright, well, let's take a music break and get some fresh coffee and come back and finish the next hour off. What do you think?
Sounds good to me.
Alright, everybody, you're listening to Mad Science. Stay tuned. Hope you're learning something and something beneficial. If you got something to add in, call in. It's as easy as a Skype call. Same username, Shaziz, on Skype, or just jump in the chat room, post your comments, and we'll be back soon after this music break. Peace and love, everybody. Stay tuned.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
We'll be right back.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Yeah, could you describe the ruckus, sir? So anyway, we talked about all kinds of different ideas out there for alternative energy solutions and... you know, I've said it before and I'll say it again. If you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough for it. Now, I'm not going to do this whole word game with all these so-called highly educated individuals out there. Oh, there's no such thing as free energy, blah, blah, blah. Well, if you believe the Earth is billions of years old, then you're wrong. Because it didn't spin for billions of years on its own. It had something going on, which in turn was causing something else to occur. For every action is an equal and opposite reaction. So if the Earth is spinning 1,000 miles an hour on its axis, then you got a lot of wind going on. So you got water falling down waterfalls. And how did the water get up to the top of the hill to begin with? Because it rained up there, it snowed up there, and filled up pools, and the pools then in turn melted out and started running down in the stream and down into the river. And so essentially when the heat on the other side caused the water to evaporate and get back up in the atmosphere, the cycle was repeated over and over and over and over again. So what I'm saying,
let's not forget about the awesome wicking effect of osmosis.
Yeah. You know, plants will drag doggone, trees will drag water all the way up to the doggone leaves at the top of the 40-foot, 100-foot tree. You know? So, now you tell me that don't take some energy to move that water that high. But no. I get these people out there, they want to use high-tech terminology and try to debate with me about whether there is or isn't free energy. Sure, the device that we use to move energy from point A to point B is going to probably cost us a little bit of money. But once you own that device, such as the hydroelectric plants that the companies own, they don't have to buy a hydroelectric generator every time they turn around. Some of these things have been going back since Tesla was around. They still work. So they'll put updates to them. They'll put advancements on them and all that kind of stuff and maintenance and stuff like that. But we've got equipment that has been generating power since way back in the 1800s that's still functioning perfect today. You know, come on, people. It's not rocket science. All we're doing is moving energy. We're not creating it. We're not destroying it. We're just moving it. And all I'm suggesting is that we take and move this energy in an orderly fashion to get the results we want and to not get the results that we don't want. If you don't want to pollute the river, then don't pollute the river. Use the byproduct, the waste products of just about every single industry out there. The waste products have uses. You know? Even waste nuclear fuel still has energy potential to it. You can still capture that energy.
Yeah, you can blow up tanks with it too.
Yeah.
Not that I'm actually promoting that, but...
Well, you know...
Let's not use it for such negative uses. Let's find a positive way to employ that energy.
Well, essentially, that's what we've been trying to say forever and a day, man. For all the trolling, and I noticed our troll finally got bored and went away because he wasn't getting under my nerves, but that's all right, you know. I've dealt with this for a long time. You know, my Mad Science channel, it's just that. It's Mad Science. I'm trying to point some things out to people. And when I point out something that should be so blatantly obvious, such as a dead battery, man, Now, what do you do with a battery when it goes completely dry and it's no good anymore? You can't
stick it outside the door of your caravan and forget about it.
Well, I guess you could do that, or you could use it to block the door open when you want to get some fresh air inside your house or something like that. Or you could use it as a capacitor, because it still has the negative and positive plates inside there. And believe it or not, you can use air as the dielectric in between there. And with a negative ion generator, you can store a static charge on there. With a Van de Graaff generator, you can still store a static charge on there. With a Wimshurst generator, you can still store a static charge on there. With a Lord Kelvin generator, you can still store a static charge on there. There's so many different potential ways to store energy on there. And the only thing that you've done throughout this entire process is set nature off balance, and you got one side pressurized more than the other, and the negative electrons want to go where the positive are. And so if you already know that, if you know that nature's going to balance itself out as soon as it has a path to ground, it's going to balance itself out. With a normal capacitor, it's instantaneous discharge. But if you already have that capacitor under load, and the load doesn't exceed the amount of energy for that capacitor, you can get an LED to run off a capacitor for a long time. Why? Why didn't it instantly blow that LED out? Why didn't instantly discharge that capacitor? Because you put a resistive load on. And when I say resistive, I mean resistive to the path that energy from that capacitor wants to make it through there. And you've got electron flow going through there, which is interacting with the materials in there, releasing photons of light in whatever color spectrum your LED is designed for. So with that said, knowing that you can use a capacitor as a battery, knowing that even after a battery is dead, you can still use it as a capacitor, then what's the deal? You see what I'm saying, Steve?
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, it's simple technology. If you look at a dead battery and you look at a capacitor, tell me what they have in common. They both have plates. Two pieces of aluminum and one piece of wax paper. There's a capacitor. That's it. Aluminum foil. Aluminium.
Yeah, speak English, boy.
Yeah. But either way, it's that doggone simple. And when you understand that energy, whether it be a galvanic from two separate metals, like a galvanized metal rod and a copper-coated rod down in the ground, you will get a galvanic action, and you will actually get a chemical action as well because of the whatever minerals or crud is in the doggone dirt. They call it an earth battery. So you're getting electron flow that way. And even as minuscule as it might sound, that electron flow is going to go somewhere. If you got a big pool, and that big pool isn't pressurized, and it has a path to that big pool, it's going to go down in that big pool. If you have a negative ion generator, and it's producing a static charge, and that's looking for a place to go, and you got a tank to store that, you got that as well. When your wind generator kicks up and starts to produce electron flow, it's going to go down there. It's going to fill the tank up until the tank can't hold anymore. Once the tank can't hold anymore, if the contacts, the post, like on your battery, there's a reason why those battery posts are so far apart. Because if they were too close together, when you charge that battery, at some point, that energy wants to make a path. The negative electrons want to go where the positive are. It will arc across that battery and short it out. It's that simple. Until everything's balanced out. And so with that said, you know, hey, knowing just the basic science of everything, knowing basics of capacitors and how electricity functions as far as what the school book says, then it's a no-brainer, man. You can get electricity from all different sources. Radio waves, wireless energy transfers, you know. It doesn't matter. You can still store that energy. And you dump all that energy.
You know what is
this? Yeah.
I reckon that we should develop a sports jacket that will charge your iPhone when the police taser you.
Yeah, there you go. You could actually design a self-defense jacket for that, for just such a purpose, where that doggone jacket would absorb the entire charge and not even hurt you in the least.
Oh, no. I mean, you should be rolling around the floor agonizing in pain, but why not charge your iPhone as well at the same time?
Well, yeah.
So you can live stream the abuse.
You could actually have it set up to where the doggone... The jacket would send a charge back to that doggone capacitor bank inside of their taser gun and blow it out of their hand.
No, that would be police assault, you know. That wouldn't be fair.
Hey, self-defense. They shocked you, man. It ain't your fault it shorted out.
If they spent all that time finding people with the IQ that would give Forrest Gump a run for his money in the Village Idiot competition, then you really should pity them, not assault them.
Yeah. Well, if you send a 20,000-volt charge back into the hand of the aggressor, then, you know, what I'm saying, that's fair game. I'm going to build it. I'm going to build a doggone suit just like that. Taser-proof suit. Think I got a market for it? Yeah, looks like I lost Steve. Anyway, where there's a will, there is definitely a way. If you understand the basics of science, and you understand the basics of how electricity works, and you understand different metals and chemistries, it's a no-brainer. Everything that you wanted to do, as far as clean, alternative, green energy, renewable energy, all of that. There's nothing out of the realm.
I think the gremlins cut me off there because I had the temerity to have an opinion.
Yeah, well, I stayed in there when I realized you weren't there. I kept rolling. Well,
the point I was trying to make is, in England in 1992, at the kind of the very last end of the poll tax protests, not riots, protests, I was standing in London City Centre with my little placard, with a kind of a rude statement about what I thought of the government. I shan't clarify that fact because it's not really necessary. And I was batten charged from behind by police carrying truncheons. And they split my scalp open.
Yikes.
And I had a number of stitches in my head because they attacked me from behind. In fact, they attacked a group of us from behind because we had the temerity to say we will not be indentured servitude. We will not pay you for our pure existence because you don't own us. Now, the whole point in my mind of mad science is so we can say, we don't need you. We don't need your electrical infrastructure. We don't need your water supply. You are caretakers of the resources of this country, not the owners. And we don't need to rent or pay them. Pay you for access to them because they belong to all of us equally.
Yep. You know how easy it would be to make a taser-proof suit?
What is a Faraday cage?
Yeah, you could use a Faraday cage, or you could use something as simple as an inner lining of aluminum foil inside your shirt.
Well, even better than that. I mean, try that on the Fonzie. He always used to wear a nice leather jacket. Then Bob's trying to get through that leather jacket.
Yeah.
Good luck with my jacket. I mean, good luck with that. You notice they don't tase too many bikers.
But you know what? You know what the aluminum foil would have done to that taser? It shorted it out, man. It would have destroyed it.
Yeah, but that would be destruction of police property, wouldn't it?
Nobody told them to shoot you.
Oh, no, but they were pursuing their normal course of duties. You know, we really have to understand this stuff properly, shouldn't it? You know, I mean, it's, if somebody gives you a command, you have to obey, or else violence will ensue. And that's perfectly reasonable, isn't it?
I suppose.
I'm sorry, I'm getting off the point here. Look, bad science is more than bits of cable and wiring, electricity production, you know, our whole world is controlled by a variety of weird sciences. Some that we can recognize and see in our daily lives. Some that are so esoteric in nature that the average person can't comprehend what it is. But they are there. But the point being is, what is the best value of being a citizen of a nation? And I will personally say, not being a burden to anybody else for any reason, but we're constantly put under burdens of taxes, of fees, of residual costs for national infrastructure, and if you don't pay, then you're stealing from everybody else because they have to pay more. Well, the question is, and the mission, I believe, of Shaziz Radio is to do away with that infrastructure because it's no longer necessary. If we can get the right people in the right places doing the right things, then perhaps we can come up with some idea that's going to free people from this constant debt slavery. And to me, that is the epitome of mad science, because we are not meant to be a burden to others, and we are not meant to be vassals and basically possessions of others either. We're supposed to be independent. We're supposed to think and love and enjoy our lives. And we cannot do that when these constant burdens and pressures are put on our heads for no other reason than controlling this. So I'm kind of all in with mad science. I want to see a time when we're not subjected to this anymore. We can just have a nice life and live it.
Yeah, I agree. You know, Stephen Gibbons posted a link in their Sci-Hub, the first pirate website in the world to provide mass and public access to tens of millions of research papers. It's got a link in there. I'll check that out later.
Hey, Stephen. Nice one, man. I'm going to be spending quite a bit of time there.
See, that's what I'm talking about, people. The information's out there. You know, Steve always says we got the vast amount of the sum of all man's knowledge at our fingertips, and what are we doing with it, you know? Well, right now, Shaziz Radio is trying to point that out to you. We look, it's right there, man. The answer's right there. And, you know, hey, if the law of man's gonna taser you, build you a taser-proof suit.
No, then he'll just shoot you in the head.
Well, probably, but build you a bulletproof helmet. We're all going to have to be running around in doggone suits. You ever seen that red man suit where they train dogs to attack people? Or did they do martial arts and beat the heck out of somebody?
I was stupid enough to volunteer to be attacked by a German shepherd dog in one of these suits.
Man.
And believe me, that is not... that still hurts.
I believe it. But either way, you know, back to the mad science of the whole deal, man. We got all the answers there. If anybody out there listening to my voice is interested in what I'm talking about, join me at ShazizRadio.com in the Super Chat room or call me up on Skype. Let's build the dream team. Let's get people together in whichever areas we can. And with the resources that we have available, somebody out there has access to some machining tools and knows how to use them. Somebody has access to a good mechanic, a good electrician. You get all these guys together and you build these things. You already have the skill set. You just need to put your skills with their skills and make things happen. See, what slows me down in my process is, number one, I'm not going to accept donations from people. Unless somebody wants to, like, mail me some junk or some old solar panels that don't work anymore. This is, you know, whatever. Some old copper wire that they ain't using. You know, something like that. I accept stuff like that because I could always use, if I see some laying in the trash, I ain't opposed to going digging it out of the trash and recycling it, repurposing it. But as far as financial, you won't see no donation button over here on Shaziz Radio. There are maybe a little bit of Google ads. That throws a couple pennies in the bucket. But other than that, you know, we're not going to ask you for any money. This isn't about money. This is about trying to get this world going in a different direction than what it is. people sitting around complaining about how terrible the world is when they have the power to fix it. That's what frustrates me the most. You go on my YouTube channel, there's a new button that you can put on there that you can actually have viewer-supported donations. I don't want no donations. I don't want to put PayPal out there for everybody to send me money. If I come across a design or an idea, I'm going to give it to you freely, open source. You know, I'm not looking to get rich. If I was looking to get rich, believe me, I could do it. You know, I got enough ideas that I could patent something, anything, and get it on the market. But that's not the point. The point is, when I said free energy, I meant free energy. You know, we're surrounded in it. And when I come across a device that I know will work, such as I believe this hydrogen engine would actually do what I say it would do, and you're using it in conjunction with that, everything from the turbo charger to the doggone plasma spark plug deal and bunch multitudes of other ideas, using waste energy to reuse that energy. I know it can be done. I mean, I believe the mainstream out there knows it can be done. And their biggest fear would be that we would actually get together and do it and prove it to one another so that you don't have to pay a light bill. You know, the technology is available. It's already ready to go. There are trucks running on hydrogen right now. Tractor trailers running on hydrogen. There are forklifts running on hydrogen. Not only...
There's aircraft carriers that are running on hydrogen.
Well, see? If you can move an aircraft carrier with water fuel, then, by God, you can turn a generator, you know, a 10K generator or something like that, 12K generator, run your whole doggone house. You know? It's ridiculous to sit around and watch people suffer and do without when you know that we have every single thing that we need to save the planet. If we let nature do what nature does, and we work in harmony with nature, and we harness that wind as it's going by to do something to make us comfortable, then there's no problem. But when you're dumping crud in your streams, and it takes a long time for your streams to recover from all that kind of stuff, it will recover, believe me. The most polluted river in the world will recover if given an opportunity, but you're not given it an opportunity. You're not allowing nature to do what nature does best, and that's to take care of us. You let nature clean up after itself, and you clean up after yourself. You work in harmony with nature with all these alternative energy ideas that we've been talking about for many years now. And people keep saying to me, Steve, and it's one of the things that aggravates me more than anything that I ever hear, outside of the trolls cussing me out and calling me every name in the book and all the stupidity and people getting big egos and running off and never want to talk to me again because I said something that they didn't agree with or whatever. But the biggest thing that bothers me in this whole entire process is the fact that people don't even try. They just deny it right straight out of the gate. You got every single idea, and then to top it off, they want to sit there and say, well, you keep talking about all this free energy and all this, but you never talk about no solution. By God, there's been hundreds of thousands of solutions out there from all different directions. You take one anomaly by itself, it's not going to run your car or your house or your toaster or your refrigerator. But that one anomaly is the missing gear in the machine that will run your house. If you know that back EMF can be used to break, to stop that generator, you know that you can use it for a braking system. Now imagine if you didn't have to have any brake pads other than maybe potentially for like an emergency backup in case your coil broke or something and you no longer had brakes, but you had these, you wouldn't have to change your brake pads every so often because you'd be electrically using the Lenz law stopping your car. You see what I mean?
Well, personally, Shazers, I think that the best form of emergency braking is Sky Blue Fiat Puntos.
What's that?
It's a kind of small Italian car that's hit me three times on my motorbike. So if you need to stop quickly and you want a soft crumple zone, pick a sky blue Fiat Punto.
Yeah.
You deserve it.
And if you need to stop quickly, just aim for the nearest wall or whatever. It's busy.
We're talking about free energy. And I'd like to tell you a little story about free energy and what it means to me. When I was a young man, growing up in kind of a rough housing estate in England, there was a guy called Charlie. And Charlie was a World War II French war veteran. And he had no family, and he was living in a council flat. Myself and my friend were considered violent, dangerous thugs that were a threat to the community. But what they don't know is Charlie knew my friend's mother. We used to go around probably once a week, find out if he needed anything and do whatever we could do for him. And that is the ultimate of what I call free energy, because we gave our energy freely.
Yep.
The guy was in a wheelchair. Somebody stole his wheelchair, and we hunted down the person that stole it. And I shan't go into detail about what we did to get it back, but we got it back.
Yeah, if we could just get past the stupidity, Steve, we got it all resolved, man. You know, if
we're not going to look after each other, what is the point?
Yeah. If you think the earth is flat or you think the earth is round, then get out there and do the experiments and prove your point. Go out there. We got cameras. We got technologies. We got drones. Go out there and do the measurements. You know, sitting around YouTube warriors and all that, arguing back and forth and cussing each other up and down a storm and degrading one another, you're not getting nothing done. You're making yourself look like a fool. Now, I talk about free energy, and I ask questions about possibilities. Is teleportation possible? Is time travel possible? Is this possible? Whatever, you know. I believe that anything is possible if you really want to get down to it. But it ain't possible if all you're going to do is talk about it. Ain't nobody going to get up and do nothing. You know, we have all the things that we need, but we need to get people together in a shop and actually do it. It's that simple. There are things that you can buy right off the store shelf that you can turn into a generator, including your microwave oven. Now, is that generator actually going to produce enough electricity to run your entire house? No, but the concept is there. And at the very least, you can get all your lighting in your house done with that. You know, you just got to understand how that energy is working. How the gas in the light bulb actually lights up. Even in an old tungsten element light bulb, you send a high enough frequency, the proper frequency through a tungsten element, you don't need a lot of current watts and amps in order to vibrate that doggone tungsten hot enough to where you'll get the visible light, the same thing that you would whatever. And I've already explained how I took an old 12-volt car headlamp that was burnt out and lit it up with 20,000-volt oil burner igniter. So it ain't that we can't, it's that we won't until people get up and do it. Until people start forming these teams, these research groups, and actually start implementing all these ideas, instead of trying to put all your eggs in one basket, use everything that you know about all the different known laws of physics. Use the advantages and the disadvantages, and when it all comes down to it, there is no such thing as wasted energy. Because even the heat that's coming off the internal combustion engine could be used for generating electricity or boiling water into steam or heating your house or cooking your food. You know, you could actually build a water system that you could circulate hot water at 200 and some odd degrees through a coil system on top of your stove and cook your food on it. Do you think you could cook food with 220 degrees, Steve?
Well, that'd actually be too hot for muffins, because I usually use about 160 degrees.
Okay, well, your average small car runs about 160 to 180 degrees.
Well, the point being is we have an excess. And when you have an excess, you can dial it back.
Yep.
But no, it's better to have too much than not enough.
You can actually cool that water temperature down to perfect level. You can adjust the water temperature on there. You know? It's...
Look, if you're not scientifically inclined, if you don't understand this, that, or the other, then go out and do something in your community.
Yep.
That's the best form of free energy that I know, is when somebody needs something, they can't provide it for themselves, and you take the time and effort to help them.
Yeah, and see, there's another point. Without even knowing anything about science, you could actually help to get the guys who do know about science motivated. You could be the one that actually, you know, the leader that kind of organizes the deal. Get everybody together. Say, hey, I know this guy over here that's really good at electricity, and I know this other guy who's a real good machinist. I'm going to bring them over here. We'll have this meeting on this day, and we'll discuss what can and can't be done. You see what I mean?
There's a billion and one things that need to be done.
Yep.
And there's some brilliant leaders out there.
And somebody's got to feed them. Somebody got to keep them entertained.
I mean, if you're not interested in electrical circuitry, if you're not interested in this and that and the other, then, to be perfectly honest, a lot of the people that I know that are geniuses are nerds. And they are true, full-on nerds. They don't even know what colour socks they're wearing in the morning, you know. But they could, you know, talk you through mathematical formulas that people struggle for decades to work out. But they may not be very good at organising things. So there's a million and one roles that can be filled.
Yep. That's it. Cooperation from everybody with every kind of talent under the sun. You know, they got this new math that they're talking about out there, vortex-based math. I just kind of glanced over it, and it talks about toroidal coils and stuff like that, and basically using energy in a different way than what we normally use, and getting some pretty interesting results out of the deal. So there are so many different anomalies, everything from hydrogen production, where like this one video I posted last week, that the guy took a piece of steel rebar, which they use in concrete to support the concrete. And he took a aluminum piece of pipe, not pipe, but just aluminum, chunk of aluminum, strip of aluminum, probably about maybe 1/8 inch thick or something like that. He clamped them together with a hose clamp on the top and stuck them down in, what do they call it, hydrogen hydroxide, I think it was. Oh, no, that ain't it. I can't remember. Either way, it's stuff that can be made out of wood ash. You know, that they make a lot of soap and stuff out of it. But I wish Thomas was still around. He'd know exactly what I was talking about. But either way...
Hey, what are you doing?
When you make...
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
You nasty little lurker. I just got back.
I'm trying to remember the doggone word. It's basically you can make it out of wood ash. It's
high...
Hydrogen hydroxide or something like that. Is that...
No, you're talking about potash.
Yeah. Doggone it. What's the name of it? Well, I put a video in there. The guy took this this chemical and put it down in with a steel rod and a aluminum rod and had them clamped together at the top and put it down inside there and was producing hydrogen with it. You can actually pour this material in with just aluminum foil alone. And the aluminum with this this chemical will actually produce hydrogen.
I want to say aluminum. Aluminum makes hydrogen anyway. If you throw aluminum in with the hydrochloric acid, it makes aluminum chloride and hydrogen gas anyway.
Let me look back through my history and see if I can get the word that I'm looking for, because...
We're still on the air?
Yeah, we're still alive.
Okay.
So don't drop the F-bomb.
What's that about? About futons?
Yeah. So, anyway, there's there's chemistry methods by which don't even take electricity that you can produce hydrogen.
Well, you're unlocking hydrogen that's been basically tied up into it, though. Hydrochloric acid is typically made by sending electricity through salt water and cracking the... salt and separating it out so that the chlorine is going one direction and the the sodium goes the other direction, and the chlorine, if it's ran through water, will combine with the hydrogen in the water and kick the oxygen out, taking its place.
Does sodium hydroxide sound right?
For what? From the wood ash?
Yeah.
I think that's potash you're talking about. That's why they call it ash. So, it's a potassium hydroxide.
Okay, well, one of the methods, all he did was he took those two metals and put them, they clamped them at the end and stuck them down inside a jar of this stuff and was producing hydrogen, which he showed. You can ignite it. It burned, you know. Now,
no
how long...
No electricity, though?
Huh?
No electricity?
No electricity whatsoever. Okay. Just the chemistry and the galvanic action or whatever is occurring in that deal. Basically produced hydrogen. Now, how long the aluminum rod or the metal rod would last, I would venture to say that probably the steel rod would last the longest. And so, you know, with that said, it would be a case of seeing how long you could have a piece of aluminum in there before the aluminum would basically deteriorate itself.
I was going to say, it doesn't take long, although the smaller the particulate that you throw in there, like aluminum foil that's torn up or something.
Yeah.
It works a lot better than throwing like a solid, you know, a block of aluminum in something to generate a lot of gas. So.
Yeah.
They do that. I had a friend that used to do that in this, it was like a what do you call it? It was basically like an abandoned pond or something. Something they made for some reason or another, and no one was using it anymore, so it was all overgrown. And it would get all this algae growing in it. And he'd take a 2-liter pop bottle, put some muriatic acid, which is basically diluted hydrochloric acid for youth. They usually use it for a swimming pool and treating water and whatnot. And throw a bunch of, cut up some aluminum foil or some pop cans or something and stuff down in there with it and close it off and then toss it out there and duck. Because it'll build up pressure from making all that hydrogen, and it'll pop. And when it does, it would spray that chlorine that it's releasing from the in that aluminum all over the place, and it'd kill off a bunch of the algae, clearing the water out.
Okay, this is HHO gas from sodium hydroxide in two separate metals.
Okay.
So basically, I think you use salt to make it.
Hmm.
But
yeah, that's the easiest way to get sodium is crack it out of that. Although it's pretty cheap to go buy at some number. Was it number 6 line cleaner? I think it that some sits.
Yeah, that's another thing that they said.
Number two sewage cleaner. It's basically 86% sodium hydroxide. So it's fairly close to being. I mean, it's more. It's got enough concentrated in it that you throw some materials that are reactive to it and it'll react with it. Aluminum is what do they call that, amphiphoric. It'll react with both acid and bases, so most metals are either one or the other. They'll react with one, but they won't react with the other.
Well, using this mixture of sodium hydroxide and two dissimilar metals like that, the aluminum and the steel, he was actually able to produce electricity or produce hydrogen without using any electricity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know enough about the process to say whether or not there'd be any off-gassing of anything that would be dangerous or not. I do know that they said you're not supposed to get this on your hand because it'll burn your hand.
Oh, yeah, sodium will do that, though, the sodium hydroxide. I don't think there is any with that. That you do have an off-gassing if you're cracking salt, because it's got chlorine in it, but sodium hydroxide, I've seen they use it for that and potassium hydroxide and whatnot as an electrolyte because it won't release a gas. It's actually the compound you're working with is a metal that's dissolving in the water.
Yeah.
So if you crack it out of the water, it's just forming a silver metal that floats around in the solution. It has to be thousands of degrees for it to vaporize. So you don't have to worry about breathing it in.
Oh, yeah, okay. This one particular video, I'll go ahead and click on it, and I'll post it in there. I'm not going to do it right now because as soon as it starts up, it'll go live. But He did a pH test on the water droplets that formed on the top of the lid to show that it didn't pollute the water. You know, that all the heavy materials that you're, like you just mentioned, are still in the container. So it might be a process that which it is not non-polluting. And so I'm trying to get a hold of the guy to talk about different methods by which you could actually build a reusable cell that you could, you know, put, you know, like have extra aluminum rods and extra metal rods. You see what I'm saying? That way, when one gets deteriorated to where it's not producing anymore, you could just replace the rods and bam, you're ready to go again. Now you got hydrogen again.
Right. There's actually, Mark Danzy has a project coming out here. They're getting ready to do a thunderclap and a fundraiser to get them underway, but they're using a carbon mesh and I can't remember if it's a cathode or anode, but one of those two components is a replaceable unit for their battery.
Cool.
So you're not having to replace the whole battery. You just, and if you want to stop using, you just dry it out. But when you're ready to use it, you throw a little salt, a little water in there, and bam, it's now, you know, running full force, running this really super bright LED system for basically the equivalent of like 85 AA batteries.
Wow.
Before that component breaks down, and then you just buy another one that's like less than the cost of two or three batteries.
Tom, is that Mark that lives out in Asia?
Somewhere over there, yeah.
Yeah, I lost touch with him a while back. I should give him a shout. Soon, actually.
You get a hold of Ken from Revolution Green. He can get you in contact with him.
Yeah, he writes for Revolution Green all the time, so it's kind of one of his platforms. Mark Danzy does. him and Ken both.
I've spoken to him on a number of occasions. Mark's a cool guy.
Yeah.
And even if, as somebody mentioned earlier, cool isn't not a term that people use anymore.
Well, if we find out that this process that this guy is doing right here, using the two metal rod and the aluminum and the sodium hydroxide, isn't letting off some sort of toxic gas, which even that could be filtered if it was, but if, you know, from what I'm understanding so far, it's not. And I've watched him burn the hydrogen coming off, so I know he's definitely getting hydrogen. But if we find out this process is safe enough to use, you got your free energy right there, man. There's aluminum cans sitting all over the doggone road everywhere, you know?
Right.
And if you know you can make sodium hydroxide at your house or even buy it on the cheap or something like that, that, you know, you could build the same doggone system with junk. I mean, there's junk iron laying all over the doggone place. There's scrap iron and some scrap aluminum, and bam, you got a hydrogen production unit right there that you're just using junk to produce the hydrogen. You know?
Well, the other thing, too, is if you know the quantity of material, because that's going to basically make a salt out of it, and you can weigh it out and find out by doing the math for the chemistry how much sodium's in it, then you can add hydrochloric acid to the mixture in the right ratio, and it'll extract all the sodium out of it and leave aluminum oxide behind, which is like the purest resource you use for making pure aluminum metal. Or if you want to run a thermal hydrolysis system, you can turn it into solid sapphire material too.
Yeah.
So it's also one of the important components for making zeolites, so that you can make a ceramic cookie cutter for making a chemical. You know, you just have to have some of the chemical to begin with to wet it down with while that stuff is in a clay form, and then you bake it out of it. When you get done, you end up with these little pockets that are shaped just like the molecule that you had wetting it down, and you can throw other chemicals onto it that are not what you want, and it'll break them down and pull them into the little pores and form the molecule that you're wanting out of them.
Well,
so
there you go, man. And look, there's
waste not, want not.
There, right there, I'm already designing in my head a doggone energy cell using that process right there. There's free energy right there, man. You know, if you can produce hydrogen that, you know, you can burn for fuel or heat or whatever with a, just a chemical reaction. And actually, come to think about it, there was a video I posted way back when that I found this guy that was running his car on hydrogen. And I don't remember what exactly he had. He had pellets that were inside containers. And then all you had to do was introduce water into those pellets and it would automatically start a reaction that would produce hydrogen. And so that technology's already been there.
Mm-hmm. Problem is most of these aren't considered free energy because they're consumed.
Well, yeah, but still, there's going to be a byproduct of it. What's a byproduct? You know, something's got to come out of it. You know, when you mix anything or burn anything, you get something out of the other side. So what's right. the use of what's coming out the other side? You right. know?
Well, I was going to say the stuff that we were talking about before where sunlight is the consumed product to make your hydrogen with it's a graphitic carbon nitride. It's not. It's just a catalyst, so it doesn't actually get changed by the chemical reaction, so it can keep doing its job as long as there's water being added to it, so that it can break it down to release the hydrogen and oxygen. You can get as much as you need out of it.
You know, there's a process by which on the side of a Navy ships, they will put a sacrificial metal on the side of the Navy ships to keep that doggone ship from rusting as bad. Did you know that? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they do the same thing with water heaters, too. There's an electrode that they shove down into it, usually made out of magnesium. And that way, it because it's more reactive, it'll break down before the inside of the tank breaks down. Yeah, it basically extracts all the stray oxygen from the water so it can't react with your tank. Yep. That thing breaks down, then the inside of your tank starts corroding, and before you know it, you got a hole in your tank, and water's leaking all over the floor.
Yep, and if you got a metal ship, you don't want a hole in it. Otherwise, you get to go down and see Davy Jones in his locker. So, that's pretty much it, man. You guys got any final thoughts on the whole episode?
Mm-mm.
Well, I'm telling you out there, everybody, I'm telling you, we have every single thing we need to give this world clean, free, renewable energy. And I'm not talking about the hoodoo voodoo version of plasma where you gotta love your reactor or anything like that. I'm talking about proven science.
Oh, actually, Shaziz, I'd like to say one thing.
Yeah.
It's okay to love your reactor, but you can't marry it.
Yeah, because, well, that probably passed the law and made that legal, too.
We're not that far into transhumanism yet.
Yeah, so you gotta wait a few years to get there. But we got the technology. We have access to the tools. You know, I don't personally have access to the tools. I mean, there is a machine shop up the street from me, and I have friends that are connected, but it's all about money. You know, how much money can you pay the machinist to do some work?
Right. Well, machinists don't magically run on dreams and hopes. They actually have to eat and have a place to sleep, so.
Yeah. And but I'll tell you what. I tell you what, listen, folks, if there's a machinist out there that has access to these tools and wants to do some machining and help me, an engineer, somebody who can run a good CAD program, and we can sit down and have a meeting, I will sit there and I will give them, free of charge, the designs to build whatever it is, and they can patent it and finish the whole process. With the express deal that I get the first prototype out of that deal that functions like I said it would, to prove to the world that it is proven technology, can and will be done. I give you every bit of information in my head for free. And whatever I can scrape up out there in this vast internet, I'll find it, I'll point it out. There it is. Try it. Let's bring these
There's
people
no
to the table.
There's no free lunch issues,
you know? Yeah. Well, if somebody wants
only free beer.
If somebody wants to build themselves a business, they got to take a little bit of a risk. And so if they think an idea sounds plausible enough that they can be willing to risk their time or their resources to try to build something. You know, that's the only way it's going to get done. If everybody's so worried about they're not going to be able to feed themselves, then it ain't never going to get done. And I don't have thousands and thousands of dollars to go to companies and have them build what I'm trying to explain to them. Most generally, they won't build just one. They want you to mass produce a bunch of them. But if we can get together with the tools that we do have access to, 3D printers and milling machines, that something that can cut out metal parts or whatever, and we can build a prototype and then take it to one of these companies and see if they'd be interested in investing in actually producing these things. You know, something. Something's better than nothing. Everything I've built so far, I have to build out of junk and recycled stuff, repurpose it, which I don't mind because it proves a point. But at some point, the people of this world have to come together and they have to invest. You know, I don't want nobody shipping no money towards me, but if you find somebody that you trust and I can help guide them with whatever ideas that I have and everybody else does the same thing, and we all agree that this is going to be open sourced, we're going to invest in this together to try to better the world, then I'd be on board to something like that. But
here's this.
Yeah.
Why don't we put it a different way? We call it mad science because it's not supposed to work. But if there's a machinist out there somewhere that is willing to give us a chance, that's all we're asking for.
Yeah, that's it.
You know, producing one item on a machine, or maybe a number of small items on a machine, is not going to take up a huge amount of time or resources, and it could lead to something quite spectacular. So if there is anybody listening that knows a machinist or is a machinist that would just give us half a fighting chance.
Yep. The brilliance of this thing
right here.
We call
it mad science for a reason.
Yep. The brilliance of this thing right here that we're talking about is every single machine shop pays an electric bill. Now, if you can build a device in your shop and you already have the plans on your CAD machine, you could build as many as you want. Then you can turn around and supplement your doggone bill and make more money instead of having to pay your doggone light bill every month, because some companies could be in the thousands of dollars. If you can generate your own energy right there on site with something that you designed in your shop, now what better testimony could you give to the world that free energy really does exist? You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Take the patent, sell it to the people, bury it.
Yeah.
As long as we get keep one or two for ourselves.
I want for my efforts is one to run my house. All right, I'll show you how to do it. I'll give you every single piece of the puzzle. I just want one for my house. I want one for my neighbor. You know. And there's money to be made too, because somebody's got to manufacture them. Somebody's got to maintain and upkeep whatever parts do have to be replaced. So it's not like it ain't going to create jobs. It can create jobs.
And well, that's one of the arguments, Shaziz. People say that if you come up with a new system of energy generation that's based on the individual unit, then it would destroy thousands of jobs overnight. No, it won't. What it means is there's a group of people that are going to have to retrain to service these devices.
Yep. And you don't even have to get rid of the old grid to do it. You could implement it slowly at a time, and then the jobs stay there. And while they're incrementally putting in the new systems, you're learning the new systems. And by the time you just went along right along with the pace, you never even lost your job. You stayed right there. They do it all the time in industry. You know, every time there's a new piece of machinery coming there, they'll put somebody on that machinery to work it when they first get there, and then they'll start incrementally putting somebody else on there. And then pretty soon, everybody knows how to use that machine. They never changed jobs just because they found a better way to do it. See what I mean?
And somebody's going to make money out of the certification system.
Yeah. Tax money will still flow. Everybody would be happy. Everybody would be making money. You know. This can be done, people. I'm telling you.
It's not an impossible dream.
And we're not violating any laws of physics. We're trying to work in harmony with nature. And isn't that what everybody was asking for? Isn't that what all the pissing and the moaning and the complaining was about? Save the planet. Go out there and save the trees with your wooden stick and your paper sign. Make food out of yourself. Or go out and plant a tree. Your choice.
I think the better idea is to cut down all the trees so you have something to put in the tree museum.
Yeah. See? There you go, man.
You gotta destroy all the trees except one, so that one tree will be worth a fortune.
Anyway, we've said pretty much... Yeah, there you go. Anybody want to buy the last remaining tree? Look, we got the answers, people. Let's just do it. Doggone it. You've been listening to Mad Science. You guys got anything else? We're about to bail up out of here.
If that's the last tree, that's animal cruelty.
Yeah, it is. Not to mention it's going to get all crowded up underneath that shade. And what if lightning hits it, man? Bam, you know, but we got our last campfire.
You really are into the doom and gloom, aren't you?
Yeah. I just want this world to exercise common sense instead of going out there bombing the heck out of each other and polluting the planet, you know. You really love the planet, then get up, tell somebody about these broadcasts and pass this information around. Get out there and do the research, put the stuff on the table, start gathering up all these anomalies that I keep talking about, how thermoelectrics, hydroelectrics, static electrics, all these different things, and put them on the table and say, what can we do with this? It's as simple as that, man. Get the people that know how to run the machinery and the electricians, wizards, and mathematicians, and get them on it. The industries out there, they make cool stuff. They keep making money, too. And you keep paying them to do it. Mm-hmm. You can't get to freedom unless you're willing to walk across it. Period. You got to do it. Peace and love, everybody. You've been listening to Mad Science. Stay tuned. Night to the Roundtable tomorrow. 8 a.m. Central to 11 a.m. Central. Hopefully we'll get something else resolved. Take care.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.